session number 26648, Rule 4.
Now then, there was...
I'm just going to interrupt you there because I want you to talk about something that I don't think you'd talk about if I didn't put it to you. Now, I think that from the conversations I've had with you, and from what you know yourself, I mean, you're not daft, Jim. Wilfred had little ideas about you from time to time, and I know, I'm pretty sure of that from some of the things that you've told me. You know, you said, you mentioned that you were always being put on different jobs, you know, before the war. Now, when you came back after the war, I mean, to me, it was fairly obvious. You've just said it. Wilfred had nobody to follow him. And I think in some ways that Wilfred, this is pure supposition, but I think myself that Wilfred would have been a lot happier if he'd had you for a son.
Well, now that's funny, because Wilfred said that. He'd have never sold out if his son had been as interested in working in textiles as what I were.
Yeah, well, now this is the thing that I'm trying to get at, because I never knew Wilfred, but I mean, I know enough about him from the inquiries that I've made to know what sort of a bloke he were. And I know very well, and knowing what sort of a bloke you are, I know that you and Wilfred would have had a lot in common. Now, was there any evidence of that when you came back after the war and started working here in the treatment you got off Wilfred?
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell me about that.
I could have still, when I come back out of army, I were offered a professional cricket contract for 2 years in Scotland. Now, we came to one period where things were a bit sticky after war. Now, when I'm put at door stand, I don't like that. I didn't want to be unemployed. In fact, I couldn't afford to be unemployed. So I thought, well, I'm not standing for that. I'm looking for a fresh job. So I put this to Vernon Nutter, who was manager. And he said he couldn't give me a decision. I'd have to see Uncle Wilfred, which was Wilfred Nutter. So I met Uncle Wilfred. And he were prepared to guarantee me full employment, 52 weeks a year, as long as I was here, to keep me here instead of going on this professional cricket contract.
What year was that, Jim?
1947.
And what would your wage be then?
Well, my wage down there, I wouldn't like to say, but...
Roughly,
happened about £4 a week, £4 something a week.
Mm. And what job were you doing then?
Well, I'd be drawing a bit then. More, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I, more warps I got through, more wage I, which your wage you were reckoned up on number of ends you did per week.
You were still on piecework?
On piecework.
There was no basic wage?
No basic wage, you were still on piecework.
Still no basic wage?
Still no basic wage, these are the things you say it. They couldn't see. Well, I'll just give you an instance. I worked next to a cripple, so I lifted him his warps, yeah. Now, in some cases, warps for tacklers to put onto the trucks to take into the weaving shed were badly placed. So with me being youngest up there, they all said to me, give us a lift, Jim. So I naturally give us a lift. But all the time I'm away from my frame, I'm not drawing ends, which affects my wage.
Hmm.
So I see all what went and saw Mr. Nutter about it. Reply I got from asking him, if he couldn't put me on standing wage. First reply I got was, well, if you're away from your buffet, say 2 minutes, Jim, book that 2 minutes on a piece of paper and reckon all the 2 minutes or whatever time it is at the end of the week, hand them into the office, and then we'll reckon it up and see how much you're going to lose. And this is their whole attitude about nutters. It's hard to believe, but it is so.
No, I don't. I just find it... I mean, I'm laughing. It's...
So, I studied this over for a few weeks. I thought, I'm a mug. I'm still going to be wasting my time writing on bits of paper. And now I'm coming, I can't find my paper. So I thought, bugger this, I'm having a rider. So eventually, we all finished up on standing wage. Not just me. But all others benefited.
Yeah. Now tell me something about that. I assume that after war you were in the Union.
No. This were a non-union place, Stanley.
Oh, I see. Wilfred didn't believe in unions.
No. And anybody that had halted up to which strikes before war would never have won it, not us.
Is that right?
That's correct.
And had he a long memory?
Oh, yeah, for all like that.
Now, that brings me round to something that... It's on the same subject. I was very surprised when Billy Brooks said to me that the first time in all the years that he'd been taping anybody mentioned joining a union to him was in 1943, just before he finished. And I thought that there'd been a tapers union. Mind you, this wasn't here, of course, this was at Westfield. Westfield.
That's right.
That's it, Brooks. And I was under the impression that the unions had got a far tighter hold on the industry before then.
Well, they had it in some areas, which were Nelson. Nelson were a strong union area, even before war, Stanley.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Before war.
Now, would you say that Barlick was behind in the...
Barlick were behind them, you see, Stanley.
Now, what would be the reason for that?
Well...
Was there a reason?
I don't know what reason would be, but if somebody had said to you, how about joining the union? And it's a bugger union, you know. And that would just passed off. But you said that now, hell fire, you'll be out of work. I have to be at union.
Now? Yes.
I'm at Draws Union now. But my job as manager at James Nutter's, I shouldn't be drawing warps. Should I?
Oh, no, definitely not.
Definitely not. I shouldn't be drawing.
But if you didn't?
But if I didn't... weren't a member at Draws Union, I wouldn't have to draw one single end at this firm. Now.
And yet, I mean, we must remember that people a long time hence will be listening to this tape, and I'll make a statement now that will perhaps make them laugh in 100 years, but the fact is that if you were working at a union shop on a normal union rate of pay, the number of warps you draw a week, your wage would actually be more than what you get now as manager.
Yeah.
I mean, we've argued this many a time. Now that, I mean, it is an anomaly, and I mean, it must seem so to people who listen to this tape, but that's a fact, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a fact, Stanley.
That if you were doing nothing else but draw warps, you could make, on a union rate, you could make,
I
more,
could make
money
more money than what I'm drawing now.
Yeah. Which, in a way, is an indictment of the industry, isn't it? It's an indictment of the way the industry's run. I mean, a man should be worth his wage.
That's right.
Yeah. How about the Weavers' Union?
Well, Weavers' Union's never been as strong, I should say, in Barnoldswick as what it is now under Raymond Hill. And yet, there's Weavers in this place. That's not a union. And they've no intention to join a union. But they're not forced to join it, Stanley.
Yeah.
But let them move out of here to say Colne now or Nelson, they won't get the start unless they're at union. But Barnoldswick, I don't know why, it's never been a really strong union place.
Of course, I don't know. What do you say there was?
Well, you take it, wages in Barnoldswick has been lower for years.
Yeah, well, now I was just going to say something about that. Would you think that it was true to say, from what I've seen of the disputes in Barnoldswick, from what I've been able to gather from different sources, I don't really see that the Weavers' Union has ever done the Weavers any good in Barlick. I mean, can you think, in your experience, you know, going back to 1935, of any time when the Weavers' Union have actually got the brought the Weavers, you know, had a dispute and got...
And Weavers been better off?
Yeah.
No, all disputes that I can remember in this area has never betted, never benefited work people. They've always come on the side.
That's the impression I've got.
Yeah. And a lot of people lost their job through it.
Now, when you say a lot of people lost their job through it, in what way?
Because in the old days, they thought that this communist attitude, because the biggest part of strikes was caused by one certain lot of people. It was the same lot that caused these strikes. And like anything else, Stanley, you'll get people like sheep. They'll follow, won't they? They don't think for themselves, they'll let other folk think, and they'll be talked into anything. Now then, this is why you got these here scuffles at these mills when we strike in this area. But there were none of these that had caused these here. They were, when police were down at Calbrook, they were back in Barley. And it was the ordinary worker, not real hard and fast union people, that were getting thumped with police and such as that. And them bosses aren't silly. They know who's who. So within a week, they'd be out at firm. They'd have no job at all.
You mean the people who, the yeah. agitators? Mm. And who were they in general? I mean, are you thinking of somebody in particular or just...
Well, I can give you an instance where a fella at Calbrook, a fella called Tom Whittaker, who was an overlooker at Dotcliffe Mill, where there were a scuffle up there with when strike. Well, it'll be round about, what, 1930-something, I can't remember just then. And, me stopped out, you know, and boot folk that were going in, and that fella never tackled again as long as he lived in this area. Yeah. You take a fella across there, a fella called Preston. He's another brother, wasn't he? You didn't tell him Preston, what's his other brother's name? He used to be a weaver at Bancroft, here. After upset, he never wove no more for James Nutter. They put him down as a communist. But he wasn't a communist.
And if, say, Nutters had somebody in like that, somebody on the looms and they wanted him out, what means could they use to get him out?
Well, you could find all sorts of complaints for Stanley. Bad timekeeper. Which is easy enough. Or you go in the toilet smoking, which wasn't allowed. Least bit of a thing. And they were cracked on, and they'd just be given a notice. They wouldn't be given a notice, they'd be stopped there and then. Least bit of a fault. It wouldn't be worth anybody's while stopping at a place like that, Stanley. They could make the life a hell.
That's it, make the lives a misery.
They'd be that frightened of sending a piece of cloth in.
Ah, wear them down.
Wear them down.
Yeah.
You, bear in mind, Stanley, if you sack one, you know there's somebody for looms. That's what we've been talking about. They're always this here gun fodder.
That's it. This is before the war.
Before the war. You could have up to 20 stood at warehouse.
Yeah.
From half past six in the morning for a 7 o'clock start.
Yeah. Tramp weavers and whatnot.
Yeah.
Weavers, Anyway, after the war, the queue of tramp weavers were no longer there.
No.
So, there'd be times after the war when... Nutters at Bancroft would be in a position where they had more looms than weavers.
Now, well, when I came by Stanley, there'd be roughly about 876 looms running. Now bear in mind that some looms gone out there. There wasn't 1150, actually there were more than 1150 looms up, because they were storing some looms then on top of some more from what Nutters at Wellhouse, well, they got going again. Now them looms were in storage here, so when they come to take them looms back out, there was less than 1152 looms in this place.
Yeah, there were about 867, were it, I think.
I don't know, I think we're about 876 at most.
Ah, something like that.
And then I can remember it dwindling down to 789 at one time. And it kept gradually dwindling. Either with people becoming old. And you mostly got young girls in them from school. Now there were rumours starting about Rolls Royce were going to take such as Bankfield over, which had been run with Rover. So old men were so anxious to get out, which they lost one or two as they went layering at Rolls Royce.
And now, when you say that, do you mean weavers wanting to get out of... But no, Bankfields were already Rover. That's it. No, it couldn't have been that. When you say men wanting to get out, you mean get out of textiles, into Rover, into Rolls Royce?
Into Rolls Royce.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
So gradually, workforce starts decreasing slowly for a start, but it is, it's decreasing, Stanley.
And this was at the time when the slogan was Britain's bread hangs by a Lancashire
thread.
That's it. So, I mean, this must have been obvious.
You could take it now, Stanley. All cotton employers then thought of was production. Carrying it off looms. Irrespective of what cloth it were like, as long as they were getting yardage and charging for it, that were it. Because it was so badly needed, was cotton, after the war. Right, as school leavers start coming in, they used to bring young girls in. Within 3 weeks, them young girls would be on looms.
How old would they be?
14. They'd be on looms in 3 weeks of their own, Stanley.
How many?
Four loom. Leave them with four loom. Well, I'll fire. This is why textiles in such a state today, Stanley. Because them, at that age, were never taught properly how to weave. And bosses, even in them days, Stanley, they couldn't sit away to keep them learning a full period of at least three months. Because it was costing them money. So they got them on four loom as quickly as they could, even if it were to produce rubbish, which they could get shut on.
What year would this be about, you know?
It's 1948, 49.
Yeah. So there was still a good market for cotton.
There was still a good market, Stanley.
And I know I've heard you on about this before, about this being one of the reasons why, in your opinion, the industry did decline, because of the way these trainees were brought in, you know, the sort of people they had to follow on. And the good weavers that you've got now, who are women that would be about that age at that time, what's the reason why they're better weavers than most of the others?
Well, because they probably have, you take Mary Cordy now, Stanley.
Yeah.
Your best weavers now is somebody that were in this mill when I was in before the war. You can name them. Mary Cordy. You take up at Olive Whittingham. She's an oldish one.
Is Olive, so is
she? Well, she's knocking on his Olive, she's no chicken.
Is that right?
Yeah.
She must have her hair dyed.
Same as Tech Martha Edmison, who died a few year back.
Oh, yeah.
At 80 summit.
Yeah.
Now, her at her age could produce more than what these young ones are producing now.
Well, I think we said at the time that if Martha hadn't had to stop, she wouldn't have died, would she? She'd have kept going.
She'd have kept going, you see.
That's it. How old was she when she finished weaving? She was...
Oh, going into 80. And there weren't anybody with cleaner looms and a better cloth producer. No matter.
Well, look at mother-in-law, Mary Epworth.
Yeah.
I mean, she used to polish her looms.
You see, you could sell their cloth to anybody, Stanley. Yeah. You could send any of that cloth to any customer and not frightened of anybody complaining about it.
Yeah.
But not now.
Yeah.
You see, you get learners after the war, Stanley. So 1948. Well, they're only 30-year-old now, aren't they?
1948.
They're 44. 1948. It's not at 1978 now, isn't it?
It's 30 year, aren't it?
There's 30 year there, Stanley.
So there's
40. Well, you take in there. You take such as I could name you some of them in there, Stanley. It'll never produce cloth as long as they've all of their arse.
Yeah.
And look at their age, they'll be between 35 to 40. They were never learnt properly in the first place. They never had a fair crack at whip. Weaving, especially with Lancashire loom, Stanley, is a very highly skilled job. There's more to it than just saying, oh, she's a weaver.
Not just shuttling.
No. Oh, no.
Yeah. And yet, wouldn't it be true to say that weaving has never really been either regarded or paid as a skilled job?
No, never. You take it now, Stanley. You know this for a fact. But there's people gone out of this place now. They've gone to Rolls Royce as a cleaner. They get a long brush, a mop and a bucket, and a tea trolley, and they're what you call a highly skilled cleaner. And they'll draw £52.50 per week.
As soon as they go.
Within 2 hours, they're skilled. Mm. You'll have somebody that's been in there 40 years, and they'll not come out of that place with £46.
Mm. Gross.
Gross. Mm. And they've been in it all their life.
Mm. There again, that is another indictment of the industry. Actually, I think myself that that is one of the big things, and I want to do more about that with you. It's a friend of mine has a saying, and I think it's a true one, if you pay peanuts, you get monkeys.
You do?
And I think that's just about the size of it.
That's the size of it.